91.3, welcome back to the show. We are back with our weekly World Economic Report, Where's the Logo? And we look at the World Government Summit in Dubai as the IMF warns of a gathering of an economic storm, okay? US-China trade negotiations continue, and closer to home, the Africa Union Summit with reforms in financing, and we've got the Continental Free Trade Area as well. At home, Eshkom. And online, a senior researcher, Development Economics at the University of Pretoria, Dr. Jason Misyoka. Dr. Misyoka, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, and hello to your listeners.
Okay, the World Government Summit in Dubai. And what, Dr. Jason Misyoka? Dr. Misyoka, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, and hello to your listeners.
Okay, the World Government Summit in Dubai. And what sort of caught my attention? IMF warning of a gathering of an economic storm. When I read in between the lines, I saw that all it is slow growth. Okay, I struggle to understand how slow growth, and it's not a lot, could actually be a storm. Sometimes analysts use dramatic terms, don't they?
They do, but there is a concern around the use of the term storm that Christine Lagarde, the IMF chief, actually used. And we just point to you, you know, some various indicators which she's pointing to as possible issues of concern. So she talked about four clouds. She talked about trade tensions as one of the most critical issues that we need to either deal with and deal with it urgently. And we know with that, of course, we're talking about the ongoing tariff tensions between the United States and the Chinese. She talked about financial tightening. And one of the recent data that report that came out suggested that the world economy is actually at about 80% in debt in terms of global GDP. In other words, the global economy is really thriving on debt at the moment. That is more than double where we were in 2007, just before the economic recession hit us in 2008. And so that is the red light as far as the stability of the global economy is concerned. And thirdly, she talked about Brexit, how that is going to affect the rest of the globe. You know, we are really talking about ripple effects for the rest of us, but it's largely going to affect some the European market in particular. There are some reports that are suggesting that over 600,000 jobs will be lost, depending on whether the British get out of the current EU deal, with a deal or without deal. So again, that's a give and take. And the fourth one, which is quite critical even for us in South Africa, is the slowdown of the Chinese economy. In fact, some data that an analyst are suggesting that even though the government of China would like to tell us that, you know, economic growth regressed to about 6%, that those numbers are actually cooked. That is what a lot of analysts are now beginning to say. So of the last few weeks, they are suggesting that the picture is worse off, but the government is cooking data to try and portray a much rosy or better picture than it actually is. And that is a concern as far as the IMF is concerned. So what she suggests is that those four indicators, or as she calls them, four clouds, they just need a small lightning bolt, and then the storm, then it pours. That's what she's suggesting. And I do think there are legitimate concerns, because the point around the gathering storm here is the fact that we are potentially waiting for another recession. If we do not deal with these issues, what is worse is that it's not just going to be a recession like 2008, it is that we are in a much worse off, much vulnerable situation as a global economy than we were in 2007. So we could rebound back after the global recession. Whether we are likely to do that if another recession hits us at the moment, it is a lot less clear.
In terms of China, again, aren't people being a bit unrealistic? Because China has moved away from the era of raw materials needed to build up the cities, to build up infrastructure. Somebody once suggested to me that China has moved from raw materials to fridges and microwaves, and that's a slightly smaller market than raw materials that China has been buying at a great pace.
Indeed. So China is going through a structural economic changes, and one of the remarkable examples is the fact that it has successfully moved from a production-driven economy to a consumption-driven economy. So if we look at overall, for example, how much, if you calculate the contribution of consumption towards GDP, in 2000, it was at about 27% of GDP. We are now talking about 41%. That is close to half. In other words, the economy is expanded, or the consumption as a contributor to GDP has expanded almost double between 2000 and now. But if you look at investments, the production, the contribution of investments towards GDP, it has shrunk or declined from 53% in about 2000 to 42%, and analysts are suggesting that by 2030 we are likely to see even a further declining of investment to 34% of GDP. So what this suggests is that the Chinese economy is shifting from production to consumption, and what this also means, and we are seeing that shift in South Africa as well, and most of emerging economies, from primary and secondary sectors to services. As a matter of fact, South Africa is now officially a service-driven economy. Previously, we were largely manufacturing and agriculture. They contributed largely, but we are now a service-driven economy. The challenge with that is that services don't always employ a lot of people. They are highly skilled jobs, and that tends to slow down the economy overall. Manufacturing and agriculture, they are really the key drivers of economic growth, especially for the emerging economies that still don't have the skills and the know-how to participate in the services sector. What we are saying is that if we are service-driven sectors or economy, then we need only the most qualified people. And that is, unfortunately, our labor force is semi-skilled and less skilled and also very low skilled in most cases in emerging economies. And that's the challenge that we're dealing with in China as well.
And of course, I'm sure you'd agree that we are in a global economy, as it were, and the unfortunate reality is if the United States gets blocked sinuses, it affects us, and if China sneezes, we feel the mucus. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, there's old analogy about if two elephants fight, it's the grass that gets hurt, and we, the emerging economies, are really the grass here between two elephants. This is China and the U.S. They are nowhere close to striking a deal. What we know is that there's a deadline that is upcoming by the 1st of March. I'm not too worried about the deadline because it is Trump who set the deadline, so he can always shift the goalposts. But what is most disturbing about the ongoing negotiation is actually the fact that it is not a negotiation. The United States is simply putting forward a demand sheet, demanding that the Chinese, they need to reform their economy structurally, they need to stop their subsidies that they are subsidizing for their exports. Those are policies that the Chinese have always had. It is going to, and they get the politicians, the Chinese politicians, that's what they use for their votes. That's their economic policy over the last so many years, five or so decades. It is not possible for the Chinese to retreat on subsidies. That is going to be a brick wall as far as the Chinese. I don't see them giving in to that demand. But that is what the Americans, unfortunately, are saying. What the Chinese are saying, though, is that instead of lowering their subsidies, they are saying we are willing to buy more of American goods to try and balance out the trade deficit by 2024. Again, I can tell you from an economic, macroeconomic point of view, that is not possible. 2024 is literally 5 years away. It is not possible for economies that are structurally so different for them to balance out their trade deal. But it is a way in which the Chinese are saying, let's talk, and we are putting on the table some rational economic arguments. But unfortunately, it is largely a political argument from the American side. It is very difficult to arrive at a consensus when you have you're trying to deal with the economic issue on one side and you're dealing with a political argument on the other side.
Do you think that China and maybe some of the other world's economies are kind of just sitting on their hands and just hoping that the Trump era is going to pass them by? Because he certainly has stirred up a lot of mud at the bottom of the pond, and making it worse has been his unpredictability. And you also mentioned that Trump on the China thing will probably just change the goalposts.
So what is interesting here is that you have the Chinese fighting with the Americans. You have, and we know now with the emerging investigations, that the Russians most likely put Trump to power. So there are some geopolitics at play on the background. What is likely to happen, in my view, is that the Chinese, if by any chance there is a way in which they can somehow with other global superpowers influence elections in the U.S. in the future, they are potentially going to do so. And we know, for example, that one of the accusations put forward against the Chinese corporate, Huawei, has been the fact that they are stealing U.S. technology and intelligence. And they do that for a reason. Whether that's factual or not, it's up for argument, but if that is the case, they don't just take intelligence, they take market intelligence and political intelligence and so on. And if the U.S. is vulnerable to political manipulation by superpowers like the Russians and the Chinese, they are by all means going to try and influence a change of regime in the next elections, which is really next year. So we are likely to see the geopolitics play much more on the background. But again, that's a theory. You know, it could be tested, but we'll see where it goes. I think the world is getting quite jittery about where Trump is and how Trump is operating on the global platform. Because whether we like him or not, the reality is that he's the most powerful politician running the most powerful economy in the world and the most modernized economy. And by that virtue, he has the potential to cause the global recession just by the kinds of actions that he's making now, which actually have global consequences. So this is what is making the Europeans and the Chinese and the rest of the emerging economies quite jittery about how he's going about things, not really realizing that there are global consequences to these kinds of actions that he's taking.
Dr. Jason Masioka, our senior researcher, University of Pretoria. It's our weekly World Economic Report. Dr. Masioka, we're just going to do 30 seconds of headlines, and when we come back, Africa Union Summit and a few words on Eskom. Stay with us.
Weekly World Economic Report on DriveTime.
Coming up in your bulletin at 5, residents of Bishop Lavis have embarked on a placard demonstration to highlight their demands and are calling on authorities to take action. Meanwhile, Teachers Union SAOU pledged its support to one of its members who was suspended after slapping a girl in a school. And finally, the IFP says the decision by the South African National Defence Force to host its Armed Force Day at Sunrise Beach in Musenberg next week will damage sensitive marine environment. Those are your headlines. More news at 5.
Weekly World Economic Report on DriveTime.
Weekly World Economic Report. Special guest, Dr. Jason Masioka, senior researcher, University of Pretoria. And we swing in now to the Africa Union Summit and the creation of a continental free trade area. Dr. Masioka, I was going to read you the opening paragraph of a story we picked up here by Peter Fabricius. He says, the African Continental Free Trade Area is a remarkable achievement. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development enthuses. At a time when trade is questioned in some parts of the world, African leaders have taken a bold step in favor of trade and of the economic integration of the continent, it notes. UNCTAD, which is United Nations, a conference on trade and development, believes this free trade area could boost intra-African trade, and this is the magic word, by 33%. Dr. Mishoka, is this too much optimism? 33% inter-Africa trade looks good, and it looks good for us too.
Yeah, I think it's economists have always suggested that one of the most effective ways of dealing with poverty and unemployment is trade, and there is evidence to support that argument. We know that China has risen to its current superpower, really, economic superpower, because of trade, and so have the Indians as well. So the path that we are looking at, a different tool of addressing unemployment and poverty other than aid, which is what we've been relying on pretty much in the last half of a century, that one is commendable, and two, it is also economically proven. And it is because when you're dealing with trade, you're actually looking at exchange of our product and improving our competitive and comparative advantages. And that has a ripple effect of creating innovation and entrepreneurs and so on. And in that regard, if we go forward with much more intergovernmental, intergovernmental trade within the continent, we are likely to see GDP growth beginning to rise. By 2023, which is African Union's development vision, the suggestion or arguments that are being put forward is actually we might even rise up to 52% of trade. At the moment, we are only doing 16%, and that is really a small amount. I also would like to add that if we go ahead we build the structures and the systems for intergovernmental trade within the continent, and we have the current 56 countries in the continent signing into the treaty or agreeing to the free trade area, we would actually be the world's largest free trade bloc. So that is a good thing as far as entrepreneurs are concerned within the continent. And that would also potentially minimize economic migration, where Africans find it much more easier to trade elsewhere than to trade from within the continent. So by all means, from a development economics point of view, trade is going to solve a lot of problems in my view, and I think that it is much more welcome. I need to say that we are not quite sure yet how many countries have signed into the treaty. They are supposed to have at least 22 countries. We know that by last month we had 18 of them signing. So we are yet to see whether four of them have deposited their willingness to ratify the treaty, and if that is the case, of which most of them had committed to the current African Union 32nd session. So we would then have the free trade deal come into effect.
So it's in a sense it's all good, and I foresee the positive spin-off of this. If we start to have intra-African trade, what that will automatically encourage is the upgrading of infrastructure. We'll have to see efficient railway lines, efficient roads, banking systems. It automatically calls for a massive upgrade of infrastructure.
Absolutely. And on one side, you've got governments that need to pick up their momentum in terms of setting up the transport infrastructure and so on. And then on the other side, you've got corporates who will begin to take advantage of the free trade area, and this would be your banking systems and so on. If we have a system that is roughly similar to what the Europeans have, you can essentially jump into a speed train and you find yourself in Cairo in a couple of hours. And you probably would have same or similar visa regimes where you don't have to go past every border having your passport stamped. If you are trading, you get one visa that covers all the trade area. And the customs union also are much more reasonable. You don't have to pay every time you're crossing a country with your services or your goods and so on. So there's a whole lot of advantage, and the integration of economies, if the European project or European Union project is anything to go by, which it is, then we would have a lot of advantages on our side.
Absolutely. Dr. Jason Masoko, we're going to leave it there. I think all of us have discussed ESCOM until the cows have come home. It is a case of I told you so anyway.
Absolutely, and we hope that the cows will come home to light and not to ESCOM's darkness.
Absolutely. Dr. Jason Masoko, Senior Researcher, University of Pretoria, as always, thanks, and we'll chat same time next week.
Thank you so much for having me, Shafiq.